Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and I'm an associate editor with Drug Topics. Today, I'm joined by Christopher Robinson from the Department of Anesthesiology, Perioperative and Pain Medicine at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I'm looking forward to this conversation and kind of giving you some information, you know, kind of currently on pain medicine and kind of look into the future.
Awesome. Yeah. Like Chris said, today we're going to be discussing emerging technologies for the treatment of pain. More specifically, we'll be exploring some of the most promising interventions that Robinson and his colleagues focused on in a 2024 article from the Journal of Pain Research. To start, can you basically just summarize where we're at now regarding the treatment of pain? What treatments are commonly recommended at this point in time? What aren't? And kind of what issues need to be addressed?
Yeah. So I think before we start with this conversation, we have to kind of put ourselves in the background of the opioid prescription crisis that is behind us. I want to make this kind of clear. So that was, you know, behind us and we're dealing with the after effects. Now we're kind of in an illicit opioid crisis, right? I think we use those interchangeably. So with that kind of in the setting, I think people sometimes can be a little bit nervous about pain medicine, and anything we talk about today is not going to involve opioids. Okay, so where are we in terms of pain medicine and treatments? So if we go back about 25 years, the last approval for a pain medication was celecoxib that was approved by the FDA on December 30th, 1998. You know, we kind of move a little bit, a few years kind of forward, then we had the recall of another one. I guess the brand name was Vioxx. You know, I think everyone kind of remembers that, had an increase in cerebrovascular events. So from that time point, from oral therapeutics, we haven't really had anything for pain until January 30th, 2025, in which the FDA approved suzetrigine. Now, suzetrigine is more of an acute pain medication, and we hope that, you know, some studies will come out for chronic pain. So in terms of the oral therapeutic side, we've really only have had those two approved in the past quarter of a century. Now, when we look at the interventional side of pain medicine, we have a plethora of treatments that are just kind of continually hitting the market. And I think it's easier for interventional treatments because you don't have to go through the kind of the different phases of the clinical trial process. You just need a kind of a 510K application that shows it's similar to another interventional treatment. So kind of in sum, where are we? One, we don't have many new pain medications out on the market. In terms of interventional treatments, we have a lot of them, but I think, you know, the data for it on short term is, you know, subjective data. Long term data isn't really there. And I think that's a little bit hard to say that about long term data, but I think that's because the population that we're doing these treatments on are, you know, older patients, which if I did it on a younger individual at the age of 25 versus 65, pain usually comes from a single source at the age of 25. Versus at 65, you have a lot of degenerative processes. There's a lot of criticism about the long-term efficacy of pain treatments, but we're also dealing with an older population that are degenerating more and more over time, right? So where are we? You know, we're still kind of a discovery process for pain treatments.
Great. Yeah, no, that was a great answer of kind of setting the stage and kind of saying that work is being done, but there still needs to be more. A little more specifically into kind of your recent experience with these topics. So diving into your Journal of Pain Research article titled The Future of Pain Medicine, Emerging Technologies, Treatments, and Education. It mentions five specific innovations in pain medicine, including virtual reality, wearable technology, artificial intelligence, neuromodulation, and psychedelics. So do any of these interventions stand out amongst the others as possible standards of treatment for chronic pain in the future?
It's kind of a hard question to answer because they're all very different. So virtual reality is going to have a different impact on pain medicine than, let's say, neuromodulation will. Neuromodulation being therapies such as spinal cord stimulator, peripheral nerve stimulator. That is currently a treatment in our, I guess, in our field. I think each of these can become very, let's say, have a significant effect on pain treatment, but it really depends how we develop them. So for example, virtual reality is not going to assist with removing that herniated disc in your back, right? But for, let's say, conditions such as fibromyalgia, where we don't have an identifiable cause, we could use virtual reality to extend something called pain reprocessing therapy, right? It helps us kind of rewire our brain, right? We can extend that to an already patient population that's having a difficult time seeing a psychologist or chronic pain physician. You know, for virtual reality, we can use that to assist with patients who cannot come to the office. We get to do physical therapy with the virtual reality headset. For neuromodulation, we're using it right now for pain treatments, right? But currently, you know, insurance companies are saying, oh, it's experimental because, you know, a lot of our outcomes are subjective. Neuromodulation can also be used at some point if we continue to investigate it to potentially get someone to walk again. And let me walk back a little bit. What is neuromodulation? Essentially, you're using electricity to kind of alter neuronal signaling, to say the least. We don't fully understand how it works, right? So neuromodulation, you put these two leads up in the spine, so spinal cord stimulator, and it kind of drowns out the pain. It changes some signaling of pain transmission. But for me, using neuromodulation for pain is only like a first step, right? If we can map out the different pathways, maybe someday we can use neuromodulation to get people to walk again, right? That would be phenomenal. Now, let's say for artificial intelligence, well, it's not going to be a singular, it's not going to be a treatment. It'll be involved in virtual reality by having an adaptive avatar that engages you in VR, right? You can use artificial intelligence in neuromodulation to kind of adapt the treatments that we're offering you, right? Let's say one mode of treatment for neuromodulation isn't working for you, and the system finds that you're using different modes. Well, maybe you can mix the different modes. Maybe you can predict when to turn on the treatment, right? Then we have wearable technology. Now, because of all the privacy laws, the regulations, you know, a lot of big companies don't want to kind of work together. You know, wearable technology will be a little bit more difficult to implement until we can find either a small company or a company that will allow us to work together. For example, let's say you're using wearable technology to see how the effects of procedure went, right? The number of steps, right? That is an objective measure, right? The wearable technology is not going to make the patient better, but it'll give us an idea better of how the patient is doing. It can also remind the patient to take medications. You know, at some point, if we can predict pain, right? If we just, you know, we're kind of at a point where we have enough processing power that, you know, with funding, we could potentially somehow figure out, is there a language to pain similar to how we identified a heart attack a century ago, right? Just electricity and signaling. So, and if you look at psychedelics, well, that's another oral therapeutic that we could potentially use. Now, it is kind of, there is this obstacle, which is the DEA, because they're currently listed as a class one scheduled drug. It also causes you to hallucinate. But if we can find the optimum dosing, or maybe there are psychedelics that don't cause these hallucinogenic effects, that would be even bigger, right? So getting a new oral therapeutic on the market would be amazing. But again, there are obstacles and hurdles for each of these different five. Each of these different five categories will have its own impact on pain medicine. And one won't necessarily stand out above them all, but when we use them together, I think that's when we get the biggest impact on pain.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great answer, kind of explaining those five technologies and the fact that experts aren't really looking for a one to kind of se separate itself, but more so using these at our disposal as options to help patients treat their pain, which is really exciting.
They're very complicated treatment modalities, right? Something that is important to me is how are we going to adapt these treatment modalities to patients? For example, virtual reality. I don't know if you've ever used a VR headset, but sometimes it can be rather difficult to use, right? You got to adjust the eye distance. Patients get nauseous with it. If it's, you know, they're not accustomed to it, I think about 80% of patients get cyber sickness, which is just some nausea. It gets better over time. It's like, how are we going to get our patient population, which is usually between the age of 55 to 75, to learn something new? Each of these will be very difficult to adapt to our patient population. As developers or creators, if we don't make the user interface easy, right? There are some companies out there that make certain complicated tasks incredibly easy to do. And that is for us to make sure that we can get these modalities to be so easy to use, you just click on a button. So, for example, virtual reality. Let's say I'll bring it home. Let's say, a great aunt of mine never used a VR headset, right? For her to be able to use that would require a lot of coaching. But if we made it as simple as pressing a button and her talking to the VR headset, right, that is going to be very easy to use. And that's where artificial intelligence comes into play, because then my great aunt can be like, I don't understand any of this. And the avatar can talk to my aunt in a manner that she understands. And without having her to press anything, the avatar and her can discuss with each other how to optimize that treatment. So instead of her feeling she's talking to a robot, she has an avatar that looks and sounds very similar to what she's used to. Now, for wearable technology, let's say she's been using it and she feels like she's not getting any good relief from her pain. Well, that's when an easy wearable, right, a watch or a ring, can kind of actually tell her, actually, you are getting better, right? And that feedback, it's very helpful. So we take these complicated technologies and we make them easy by having, a great user interface. Now, let's say, for example, neuromodulation. We fully don't understand how it works. And as physicians, sometimes we don't understand how the programming, how it works altogether, right? The different functions using the kind of the device they give us. So making all this as easy as possible for the patient, literally simple clicks walks the patient through, it'll go from being very difficult to being very easy to use. And that's, I think psychedelics has its own thing, right? I think on our end, it's about how do we optimize dosing? And if we cannot optimize dosing, do they have to do it kind of in a clinic? And so I think that is not so difficult to do, because then we take it out of the hands of the patient. So in terms of adapting, these are all very complicated technologies, but it is on our end to make them as simple and easy to use.
Awesome. Yeah. Obviously, those will be challenges that kind of foreseen challenges as these technologies become more common and providers knowing to balance education with that also providing care in general. So definitely
Yeah.
something to look forward to.
Yeah, the education part is key, right? So we're kind of in our current climate, and we'll go into politics, but in current climate, we have our payers, who are not reimbursing as much, though we may see some change. They may be linking executive pay to customer satisfaction. So we have this environment where we're not getting the reimbursements that we need to kind of cover the lights, pay the bills, as well as, take home pay. We're also in another realm where research funding may decrease over time. Okay. So if we're already having seen a larger number of patients, we need to educate ourselves better on the items, work better with these companies, because we may not have the time to explain everything to the patient. But if we educate ourselves, right, if a patient doesn't know how to use an item and the representative from the company isn't available, how is that patient ever going to use anything? And I think we're all guilty of prescribing something and not necessarily understanding how this neuromodulation device works. But if we can understand it and we can tell it to the patient in very simple language, they're more likely to use it. And when we educate the patient, and again, this is where AI may be helpful, if we can educate the patient in our own language, and then we give them some sort of app or video where AI can adapt it to their education level, their background, then that patient will feel included and they'll understand more of the technology. We did a study where we implanted a spinal cord stimulator in a patient. And we decided to follow up with all the patients. And there were a group of patients that just never returned. They just didn't know how to use it. And this device, costs, $20,000. You put all the hospital facility fees and everything. It comes up to be over like $100,000. So how is it that we're kind of missing this patient education, right? If we just told the patient, hey, your device isn't on, that's why it's not working, right? That's simple education. Educating the patient on what they're going to expect is incredibly important, because otherwise we have just cost our healthcare system a significant amount of money, and the patient doesn't even realize they don't have it on or not using it appropriately. So education is very key, but we have to deliver it in an efficient manner. And that's where a lot of these technologies come into play to kind of alleviate the burden of physicians. And I want to take this maybe a little bit of a tangent. But AI will not take our jobs. It'll assist us in an already overburdened healthcare system, right? As humans, we make a lot of errors. Machines make fewer errors, right? And we work together, can expedite our life together. So AI will help us with education. And I think overall, we just all have to do a better job, including, we're all patients at some point. We also have to kind of put the effort into our own health and our own understanding, kind of what are we getting for treatments?
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's a great answer. I feel like you touched on a lot of kind of specific things within pain, but also industry arching things that all providers within healthcare should be keeping a close eye on. Awesome. So, do you believe that these technologies have the future potential of finally alleviating issues of pain within the US? Or do you think chronic pain is something that will always be a burden on the public? So, basically, whether it's these technologies that are kind of the catalyst for doing that or other therapies, do you think that pain is something that the world kind of just has to get used to?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a complicated answer. I think we will never be able to get rid of pain long term. And I think it goes back to kind of what I said earlier in the podcast. If we're 65, 75, 85, our body is continually deteriorating. There's a degenerative process that's occurring. Now, in order for us to really stop pain, we have to regenerate our tissues, our cartilage, our joints, our muscle. It's hard to maintain muscle as you get older. Until we're at that point, it may be quite difficult, right? Because we have trillions of cells in our body. And to kind of coordinate that process can be difficult. There is a hope of regenerative medicine, but we may not be at that point at the moment. Can everything that we're doing now alleviate pain? I think we can push it off until further, right? If we can get someone to, let's say, you got a virtual reality headset, you just had a total knee replacement, your knee is hurting still. You don't want to go to physical therapy because, let's say, you have no one to take you. You put on that headset, right? You have an avatar talking with you. You get up, you're moving around at your home. Instead of you not going to physical therapy appointment, you have your headset. Now we have changed your path, right? So now your acute pain after your knee replacement doesn't become chronic pain. So rather than having to become a chronic pain patient at the age of, let's say, 55, we've gotten you moving again and again and again, and maybe that pain returns at the age of 65. So we alleviated or pushed off that chronic pain for 10 years, but then again at 65, maybe another joint's going. So will we be able to cure pain entirely? At the current moment, I don't think that's, we're going to get to that point unless, let's say Neuralink, we can transfer conscience into like another new body or into the cloud. A joke, but not a joke. I don't see us alleviating pain entirely. I do see us giving patients pain relief, better pain relief that's targeted, right? Personalized medicine. I can prevent that conversion to chronic pain. I can delay, let's say, the degeneration of some of your joints with regenerative medicine. I think we need to come to terms with what pain is. A lot of it is psychological, and I think we don't do such a great job generally on treating that as well. There's not a sufficient number of properly trained professionals to kind of handle that aspect because chronic pain and mental health, they're tied, right? About 80% of chronic pain patients have some sort of mental health disorder, which when you treat one, the other one gets better. So I think in order for us to really truly get the maximal impact with our current treatments is to incorporate both mental health and pain treatment. And again, how do we do that? We can use AI virtual reality to provide some mental health treatments. Right. We can use psychedelics or new oral therapeutics that are coming out to tone down the initial acute pain. Someday I would love to cure pain, but I think we have to kind of understand what is pain, why it's there, and kind of not have our hopes up that we think we're gonna get 100% pain relief because our bodies do degenerate and we have to understand that. So my goal, and especially with these newer technologies, is to use it to mitigate pain in the present moment.
Overall, what are your short and long-term hopes for these emerging technologies?
Yeah, so my short-term goals are to start clinical trials, right? To kind of reopen the spigot of research or kind of new drug discoveries for pain. All right, we have Vertex that they came out with, suzetrigine. There's Xgene that's coming out with a potential, new pain drug. Short term is to really understand what these new oral therapeutics are doing for us, to provide objective measures for our current interventional treatments, right? Because your 1 out of 10, your smiley face versus the frowny face may be different for you than it is for me, right? So I want to find ways to provide objective outcomes for a lot of our treatments so that they're here to stay. Long term, it's more of really about personalized medicine. Your perception of pain may be very different than my perception of pain. Maybe my pain tolerance is not really there, and it's, but that's not to say that your pain of, let's say, an 8 out of 10 is any worse than my 3 out of 10, right? I may just have now, I mean, let's say I have a higher pain tolerance. There should be, and there will be, I know, at some point, more objective measures of pain, just the way if your heart is dysfunctional and you're in atrial fibrillation or you have a heart attack, we can now objectively measure that. And at some point, we will have some sort of objective measure of pain, and whether it's going to be in a decade or 50 years or next year, these are my long-term hopes, because I think it's not fair for that very, hardworking someone who's been in the field for 50 years, whose knee pain, if you transfer that knee pain to me, that would probably crush me. But it's not fair to that individual, right, to say their knee pain is 2 out of 10 versus, let's say, I live in the city and my knee pain is 10 out of 10 when it's actually 2 out of 10, but I'm getting more attention because that individual who's had a kind of a tougher life doesn't want to say, oh, it's excruciating. So long term, I want to find objective ways to be like advocate for patients, because it's not fair when some payers put a cutoff for pain as a way to say, hey, you know what, we're not going to approve this. And I'm like, well, that's not fair to the patient, right? So objectively, I want to find objective measures for our outcomes as well as for our patients to be like, you know what, you may say you're 2 out of 10, but we can detect that you're in significant pain. And one thing I did not mention is that chronic pain, if you adjust for inflation, it's well over $1 trillion to the healthcare system. So we have new drugs come out for heart disease, cancer, diabetes, but yet chronic pain consumes more healthcare dollars than all those three together. But if you look at the number of treatments coming out for those three, it's insignificant to what's coming out for pain, right? It's get two new approvals versus the plethora that's coming out for all those three. So long term, this is we need more awareness so we can bring patients, because at some point you and I will have chronic pain, whether we see a physician or not. It would be nice to be like, hey, there's treatments out there for me, for everybody.
Awesome. I think that's kind of the perfect way to wrap this up. I really appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Of course, Brian. And thank you so much for having me. And hopefully, maybe someday we can bring new things to the market for those who are suffering in pain where other things haven't worked for them. And that's kind of my life calling.
Awesome.
Full-time nerd.
Well, we love it, and it's a very exciting space, and we look forward to kind of what comes in the future.
Awesome.
Thank you.